And then as the time went by, we started with the Bitcoin loan book. And that really completely changed everything, because the majority of our clients were people that had been holding for Bitcoin for 4 or 5 years already. So we did the work of orange pilling them, and they've been holding Bitcoin for 5 years. So all of them were ready to use our lending book, right? So it was a very natural process to start growing that business. And that's when we kind of like really took off, because the exchange business is very competitive. You know, you're earning basis points, and every time it's compressing and compressing and compressing. So our thesis is really that the business is really around financial services around Bitcoin, not so much of just buying or selling, right?
This isn't for everyone. It's for the ones who know the old system is broken and are ready to build something that lasts. Welcome to the Build with Bitcoin podcast. Today, we're thrilled to chat with Jose Flores, CEO of Arcadia B, about his wild ride into Bitcoin, from bootstrapping his startup in Mexico's tricky crypto scene to evolving it into a full-on operating and treasury company. We'll unpack the educational and regulatory hurdles and how Bitcoin could supercharge Mexico's financial future. As a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. If you enjoy the content we're producing, please remember to share and leave us a comment. Thank you. Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. I'm co-host Israel Munoz, joined with co-host Lynn Bairstow. Today, we have the pleasure of welcoming onto the podcast Jose Flores, CEO and founder of Arcadia B, formerly CapitalX, which is Mexico's longest standing Bitcoin-only company, and now making a shift into the public markets through a listing in the Mexican Stock Exchange. Jose, we have a lot to get through today. We'll have a very interesting conversation, I'm sure, on Bitcoin, the asset for private and public companies, and a lot more to get into. But first of all, welcome. It's a big pleasure to have you on representing Mexico, and hopefully we can get into the landscape of Mexico and Latam as well. But happy to have you on. How are you, Jose?
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me. Lynn, Israel, it's a pleasure to be here on your program. Thank you also for everything you're doing, educating people out there. So couldn't be happier to be here.
No, we're really excited. And of course, we've known each other, me being based in Mexico and Israel being Mexico, we do have a partiality. And I've been in the, you know, in Mexico, and it's just been really difficult to have a Bitcoin only focus in the country, because it does tend to have a lot of kind of broader crypto leanings in terms of people understanding what digital assets are. And so you started Capital X, which is now known as Arcadia B, but in 2017, how was that, starting a Bitcoin-only company? And tell us a little bit about your journey into Bitcoin. What made you so clear on focusing solely on Bitcoin, and why you feel that's important? And how challenging was it?
I mean, you can imagine how challenging it was, not only on the regulatory side, but also, you know, family, friends, everyone overall thought I was crazy. And the reason I had so much clarity, I went to undergrad in the United States right at 2008-09, you know, right after the financial crisis. So, of course, you know, I wanted to understand what happened. So I went into economics. And, you know, I think it was on year three, you know, once we start getting into like the nitty gritties and I understood how the Fed worked, I was, you know, blown away. I never understood how things really worked. I thought we were still, you know, backing money with gold and all of that, you know, old story. But when I realized how everything really worked, I just couldn't believe it. And I got kind of depressed, you know, being like, I mean, this is such an unfair system. Like, why do I even bother going to school and, you know, all this effort and whatever? So, and there was nothing I could really do. So I just continued with life, and I finished school, came back to Mexico. Worked for the government but like contracting for government for a while. And, you know, I got an experience into that and saw all the corruption and, you know, all the waste and mismanagement. I just was, you know, for some reason, life took me through that route, and I was just tired of the system. I went to New York to do a master's. And while I was there, you know, I've already heard about Bitcoin, but, you know, just as funny money you used to buy things on the dark web. Like, I really didn't understand like the impact and the technology behind it until I was doing my master's. And in there, you know, I was taking a math class, and for some reason it was mentioned there. And I was like, what is Bitcoin doing here? And then I started digging deeper, and I was very fortunate to meet my current partner, co-founder. He is like very deep into, like, he's an engineer. I'm not. So I couldn't really get into the code and all that. And he started explaining to me. And, you know, when I kind of saw the solution that I was looking for, you know, since my undergrad, and I was like, oh my God, like, this is really, really big. So, you know, I was working in construction, doing a master's in construction, and I just dropped everything. I finished my master's for project management on construction, and I just was like, I don't care. I'm going to drop everything, and I want to work on Bitcoin like full time. And at the time, Yuri, which is my partner, he was doing trading, like high frequency trading, doing arbitrage. But he was like, you know, we do good balance, because he was like all, you know, very unprofessional, if you would say, using personal accounts and using like not, you know, like very not well managed. So I was like, okay, you do the coding, I'll do everything else. And we found the company around that time, which was like 2016. And then, you know, we had the big bull run, and we did really well that year. But then the spreads were gone. And we were like, okay, now we're sitting a ton of money, and what are we going to do now? Like, there's no, like, what we were doing was done. So from that point on, we were like, okay, now, you know, we got lucky, if you want to call it that way. We're sitting, and we know the cycles and 4 years. So we're like, okay, let's start building something. From there, you know, things started gradually. You know, we started doing the exchange, and then it just grew from there. But yeah, I guess I was looking for Bitcoin before it was even invented. It's like, or around that time, at the same time, when I saw how the system really worked, I really got depressed. Like, it was hard for me to see people, you know, competing and going to school and working long hours. And if you understand the system, it's like, I mean, there's no point. I mean, it's very hard to break out of that system without having assets, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, you hit on a point that's super important, which is first seeing how the actual monetary system in the fiat world functions. And if you understand that, then you realize, of course, that there's a big problem. In Mexico, I mean, I want to get your thoughts and also maybe set the stage as far as, you know, Mexico and why it may be, you know, a little bit different than other more developed countries with more stable currencies. But Mexico, Jose, I mean, there's a long story of various crises with, you know, inflation, all because of mismanaged debt, fiscal deficits, devalued currencies. So I my personal story, I came from Mexico City to the U.S. out of the 94-95 peso crisis. So I think as a country and as a population, Mexico should see very clearly that when you leave money managed and printed by the government, there it doesn't lead to good outcomes, right? What do you see in Mexico that makes you optimistic?
I mean, I just think Mexicans, we're very resourceful. You know, it's like we adapt on the spot. We're just like that. We've endured so many hardships that, you know, there's even a story where, you know, these German guys, they needed to find a solution for a line of production. And sometimes there were boxes that were coming out empty. And, you know, people, engineers, you know, they came up with this like $1 million solution, and sometimes it would work, sometimes it wouldn't work. And there's just a Mexican guy in the line. He's like, dude, he just turns a fan to a line of production and the box that was empty will just blow away. So we Mexicans have that kind of, you know, spark where we're very creative. We adapt on the spot. I think it's just a matter of people having the right information. And I think that's what has been lacking in Mexico, where, you know, the narrative has always been crypto, you know, trading, give me your money and I'll trade it for you. And I'll give you, you know, like 20% per month, you know, those kind of crazy stories. And people just, I think sometimes also when people are desperate, they take very desperate or bad mistakes, but then they learn, right? So I think we already went through that process last halving, where Mexicans got all into crypto and they lost big time and they got scammed and they got like everything. And now this cycle, I've seen a lot more Bitcoin maxis, or they don't even know what Bitcoin maxis is. They're like, I only invest in Bitcoin. I know what self-custody is. I will never do it any other way. And it's because they learned, right? And this cycle, I've seen a lot more of that, where people now are understanding that Bitcoin is different. And the narrative of Bitcoin only is gaining traction. We see a lot of more, corporate family offices looking into only Bitcoin, not crypto.
Lynn and I are partners at Baselayer Advisors, where we use our network of venture capital partners and startup founders to connect investors with unique opportunities within the Bitcoin innovation space. Alongside this, we help startup founders with their growth and fundraising. Visit our website's advisory section to learn more.
So I think it's getting there, and I'm hopeful because Mexicans will understand it very fast. It's just we need to put them the information out there, and they'll adapt on a dime. So that's kind of my hope for Mexico. I even talk for the government. Sometimes government can be very inefficient, but also sometimes once they get it, they can change everything in 2 weeks. So, they can be very efficient when they want. So I'm hopeful that, the whole society, including the government, will become very pro-Bitcoin, because everyone benefits from this technology. It's just we need to show people that.
When you first started Capital X, did you have a particular client type in mind? I know that I've heard you talk all the time about the importance of education and educating on how Bitcoin is different. And there are so many, there are different sectors inside of the Mexico community and economy, but did you have a particular client focus in mind that you thought will start here and that way it'll gain traction? And how has that changed over time, if it has?
Yeah, it's like all startups, you start with a plan and you just pivot along the way all the time. it's like you keep iterating, more data and redirect everything you're doing. So at first we were like, okay, let's build this for retail. It's like retail, yeah, that's where we need to go. But retail was not ready for Bitcoin only. For them, they saw a price of $20,000, $30,000 and was like, no, I'm going to buy a penny stock, hoping it will go to that amount and whatever. It didn't work. But thankfully, like I told you guys, we kind of always had our Bitcoin treasury before then, because we were like, everything we hold on Bitcoin, there's no cash flows. Like cash was only for day-to-day transactions, liquidity or whatever. So that really helped us on not being in a rush to generate revenue. And we were more thinking, okay, like, what is really going to work in 4 or 5 years from now? So we understood that we needed to just reach anyone out there that was ready for Bitcoin. And what we experienced is that retail wasn't that ready. But what we did see is like high net worth individuals, some family offices, and just companies, companies that needed ways to move money between borders. And we kind of started attacking those markets. We kind of, started growing slowly, word of mouth, because, we didn't got big funding or anything. So we never spent big on marketing. But the only time we spent on marketing was going to events physically and orange pilling people there, like boots on the ground. But we never spent money on like social media or whatever. We never did any of that. And slowly, we started getting more clients and more clients. And then as the time went by, we started with the Bitcoin loan book. And that really completely changed everything, because the majority of our clients were people that had been holding for Bitcoin for 4 or 5 years already. So we did the work of orange pilling them, and they've been holding Bitcoin for 5 years. So all of them were ready to use our lending book, right? So it was a very natural process to start growing that business. And that's when we kind of like really took off, because the exchange business is very competitive. You're earning basis points and every time it's compressing. So our thesis is really that the business is really around financial services around Bitcoin, not so much of just buying or selling, right? So that's when we realized, okay, we need to think big on this side. And we start growing our lending book, and you know, it's been evolving. Even some of my clients now, they're lending us money so we can lend out. And just the market is maturing a lot. So to give you an example, when I went to investors and I was like, okay, lend me money at interest rate, and I'm going to add a spread on that and lend it to people with, you know, Bitcoin as collateral and everything. And they were like, okay, but what are you going to give me in collateral? I was like, nothing. You know, I have the Bitcoin. I can give you keys and we can share some of the custody with the Bitcoin. But if the price crashes, I'm not going to be able, if you're sleeping and you don't sign, I won't be able to like margin call or sell the Bitcoin to cover your part. And they were like, no, that doesn't work for me. Like, I need you to guarantee the fiat return to me. I was like, the only way is if I hold the custody of the Bitcoin. So there was a lot of friction there. But now I have an investor that he's like, no. I mean, if there's a margin call, don't sell the Bitcoins, please. I'll keep them. You know, so, you know, the market is maturing. And now you see these guys with access to capital that really understand Bitcoin. And they're like, no problem. I'll have one key. The guy who's putting down the Bitcoin has another key, and you are escrow and you do the third key. And if, you know, for some reason there's a margin call, I just keep the Bitcoin. And, you know, that changed the game, because now people who are giving us their Bitcoin, they're more confident on the whole multi-sig structure and all of that. And we're all about that. You know, we're Bitcoin maxis and we don't like custodying other people's Bitcoin. But, you know, sometimes it's not because we want to, it's because our investors want to. And you know, we need to comply with that. But this solution for me was beautiful. And it's just one sign of how the market is maturing. And, you know, that was 4 years ago. And growth is exponential in Bitcoin. So imagine where we're going to be in 4 years from now.
Yeah. And it is, I think, a massive shift, what you just mentioned, Jose, because what essentially happened there is now you have pretty sophisticated and mature institutional players understanding, okay, now when this triggers, you know what, I want to keep that Bitcoin. I understand that it's a hard asset and pristine collateral that I'd be better off holding and managing risk around that. That being said, I think there's still signs that we have a long ways to go. I don't know if you probably saw the recent Standard & Poor rating of Strategy, the largest, of course, treasury company, and they're still discounting, from what I could gather, they're still basically assigning negative points, right, to Bitcoin on Strategy's balance sheet. I think it's inevitable that will change and it'll completely flip-flop eventually. But it goes to show, right, there's still a ways to go. We're still taking the baby steps in this journey of educating on Bitcoin's power as collateral. But, you know, I'd like to get into the transformation of Arcadia from a Bitcoin operating company, let's say offering these financial services, to tapping the public markets in Mexico, Jose. But before that, so just to do a quick highlight, you mentioned a couple of them, but CapitalX and now Arcadia, be the financial services around Bitcoin that you guys have been offering has been, so essentially the exchange business, so the buying, selling, holding, the lending books. As I understand, there's also a debit card offering from you guys. Can you tell us maybe what those core services are?
Yeah, it's more like a credit card where basically you can use your line of credit. Instead of having to withdraw to a bank account, you can just use your Visa card anywhere in the world. And that's kind of a way to access your line of credit. And then we also have a way for anyone to accept Bitcoin payment. And then we have a toggle where, you know, it shows a percentage and people can select what percentage they want sold into fiat and what percentage they want to keep in Bitcoin, right? Because the first thing we heard from businesses is like, I cannot keep the Bitcoin because I need to pay rent and electricity and whatever. So it's like, okay, you decide how much you convert to pesos. So it's all done automatically. If you put 90-10, when you receive Bitcoin, 90% will go into pesos and you keep 10% in Bitcoin. So that's kind of a, for me, that's the best way to stack Bitcoin for people that don't really are into it and not ready to spend money into Bitcoin. It's just a way for them to accumulate Bitcoin without having to spend money. And it's just good for the ecosystem. To be honest, it hasn't really gained a lot of traction, but it's something we want to offer all the time because it's very important for the Bitcoin ecosystem. And then the third services we also offer, it's the new fiduciary model where we have a SOFOM and there's a trust inside. Basically, we're upgrading our lending book. So before, you know, you just had a contract that, okay, you're giving me Bitcoin and I'm going to give you fiat and there's a contract. But, you know, contracts, you know, we're in Mexico, they're fine, but there's nothing that. So with a trust, basically now we are under Mexican law, we are very responsible for the assets. We are on a whole different level of responsibility. And, you know, you need to document everything and you need to go to like notaries. And so it's a more robust process. So people are safer when they're giving us their collateral to get a loan. And we're going to do all kinds of business on top of that, like helping people do collaborative custody, full custody, and everything in between. So, because I'll just give you an example. I have a client who in the early days, he bought Bitcoin and now it's like a lot of money because it was like 6 years ago. And he's like, I don't want to have this responsibility because his family's Bitcoin. And it's like, this is too much for me. Like, I'm not ready. I'm not technical enough. Like, this is dangerous for me. Like, I don't want to have this responsibility. So he's looking for this kind of solutions where it's like, okay, yeah, I want you to custody Bitcoin, but I want to leave everything in writing, who can access the Bitcoin, who can't, when, why, you know, and kind of like leave like a trust basically on the Bitcoin. So that's kind of our new business model, which we're really excited about. But those are the main things, you know, it's custody, it's buying and selling Bitcoin and the Bitcoin book that or line of credit, which includes a credit card.
You know, I always find that some of the most successful founders are the ones who are solving problems for themselves. And it sounds like it's kind of the way when you and Yuri started and you wanted to, you know, figure out a better way of handling everything, that you kind of created a company to solve your own problem and then found a fit with many others. And to your point, I think that Bitcoin's appreciation has also made, I mean, it's the only asset that I think that, you know, people, once they really understand it, realize the benefits of not selling it, but continuing to hold it. But how do you access the appreciation in it? So I think the tools that I'm hearing that you're releasing with Arcadia allow people to kind of utilize the gains on their Bitcoin without having to exercise a sale. But I'd like to get into a little bit about the whole concept of the Bitcoin Treasury, which was part of your announcement. And this happened in late August of this year when you switched from Capital X to Arcadia. And as part of that, you also announced the more formal strategy of being both a Bitcoin operating company and a Bitcoin Treasury company, much like the success of Strategy, formerly MicroStrategy in the US and Metaplanet in Japan, and some of these other companies that have really used financial engineering in order to accumulate a greater amount of Bitcoin. Can you explain your thought process and how you came to, you know, this is a significant move inside of Mexico and really globally, I think, in the financial markets of understanding the power and the potential of holding Bitcoin as a treasury asset. And as we mentioned earlier, Israel and I have never really featured anyone of the treasury companies on the podcast yet, because we really focus on company builders more than financial engineers, but you're both. So would love to hear how you came to adopt this strategy inside of Arcadia.
You know, it's funny. I think it was just meant to be, really, because there were so many strange things happen and, you know, everything was just like a lot of flow and people aligning and finding the right people and all of that. And it all started with a bluff from someone I met in Vegas. So the story is, I met Boyd here in Monterrey and he comes and is like, hey, what do you think about Bitcoin Treasury Company in Mexico? I was like, there's no way. I mean, the market's not ready. They're not sophisticated enough. And you know, I know some people that have public companies in Mexico and I talked to them. And, you know, the first thing was like, get out of here, like you're crazy. So I didn't see it happening. You know, really, I told Boy, like, I don't think this is going to happen. And then I also hated the idea of concentrating Bitcoin in custodians. So both my partner and me, we didn't like that idea. Like you say, it's just hoarding Bitcoin using financial engineering, but they're not really custodying the Bitcoin. So that leads to paper Bitcoin and naked shorting. And so we were like, no. But then we were in Vegas and a guy just for some reason, he was like, oh, you're from Mexico. Yeah, we started talking. And he's like, I have $250 million to deploy to a treasury company in a new market like Mexico. And I was like, oh my God, really?
Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River. River is a financial services company that allows you to purchase, sell, and transfer your Bitcoin all through a great suite of products, high security standards, and as of recent, even allowing you to earn a Bitcoin yield on your US dollar cash deposits. For a personalized onboarding experience, go to partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin.
So I called Boy and I was like, apparently there's demand. What do you think? And he was like, all right, let me test the waters. And he tells Ed Julien, hey, we're thinking of doing this. And then he's like, I'm in. I was like, what? I was just calling you to see what you thought. And now he's in. So we're like, okay, this is happening. And the only condition we set out at the beginning is like, we're going to do self-custody. Like, there's no way. Like, we'll rather don't do it if investors are like, no, it's too dangerous. You need to put it in Coinbase. It's like, no. We're never doing that. That was our only condition and is still our only condition. So, you know, we started talking to people and we saw there was some kind of interest. And what really convinced me was Boyd's speech, was like, you are too maxi. And that's why you've been so slow and you haven't scaled. You need to meet people where they are. And people are not ready for custody. People are not ready. And I kind of been realizing that over the years where people were just, you know, even seeing, like, for example, some of my friends, you know, I've been talking to them about Bitcoin for 10 years and they still haven't invested in Bitcoin. And I was like, if I'm not successful there, there's something wrong that I'm doing. Because I've been, you know, able to earn spiel maybe four or five friends, not that many. So I was like, okay, we need a new approach. And that convinced me because I think a lot of my friends will definitely buy an instrument if they can call their bank and be like, okay, buy this ticker. Everyone will be in Bitcoin, or a lot more of my friends would be in Bitcoin. So, and it's all part of the custody. People are afraid of taking responsibility. And I really never thought people would be like that. And then the other day I read this Dostoevsky quote, which basically says this, people are not, sometimes they're not ready or they don't even want it. So I was like, okay, let's adapt. If my mission is to unspiel people in Mexico and giving them exposure to Bitcoin, I mean, this is pretty efficient. So that's why we decided to go ahead with it. And also, you know, having Boyd and Ed in the team, both of them joining and helping, that definitely helped us take that decision.
And Jose, I mean, well, first of all, I think you're spot on in your comments of kind of meeting people where they are. Because, yeah, I mean, when you really think about it, it is a big leap, right? You have to basically undo all your thinking that you maybe learned in your, you know, your economics university classes. And I mean, that's just the reality, right? We've been taught how money and economics works for decades in a fashion that you have to kind of unlearn and just strip it down to the bones when you get into Bitcoin and then go from there, right? So yeah, to your point, not everyone's ready to take the leap to just go Bitcoin maxi and believe fully in what this vision that you hear people on the internet telling you should be. So I think we're making progress slowly but surely. And as far as the public listing on the Mexican Stock Exchange, so being a public security, you've of course done a lot of work in researching this and specifically within Mexico. I mean, for someone listening, what are some of the benefits that having a public exposure to a publicly listed security might give you? And specifically, what pools of capital do you think will be most interested in a company like Arcadia B?
Yeah, so I think it's like a multi-step process and it's going to take us many years. It's not something, you know, we're not opposed to it, but we don't think it's something like, you know, Meta Planet, where in 6 months we're going to be worth billions of dollars. I think that's even kind of dangerous. You know, when you grow too fast, too soon, you know, you get the wrong kind of investors. I mean, see what's happening with NACA. You know, you need to be very careful, and we'd rather grow small with the right investors and with the right, you know, engineering and all of that. So it's a multi-step process, right? So right now we are, you know, we have preferred shares on the private market where we're placing them right now. And then from there, we have the same instrument with a little less favorable terms as the first round. It's called a certificado bursátil. So in Mexico, you can issue public instruments while being private. So it's more debt, kind of like debt instruments. You're not listing the equity, the common stock, but you can list preferred shares or convertible notes, that kind of stuff. So on the first round, which is the certificado bursátil simplificado, it's not for retail. So that's going to be one step. And then we have the full certificado bursátil, that one's for retail, and then the IPO. And the reason we, because, you know, we've thought about this, we could just do the certificados bursátiles without going public, staying private. And, you know, we've considered this approach, but the thing is that, you know, people at the end of the day, they want to be able to have liquidity, right? Being able to sell the shares, pledge them as collateral, like do something, not being stuck there for 5-10 years. So if you're private, it's very hard to put value on the shares. If someone wants to exit, how you're going to value the company, under what metrics. So it's just everything gets more complicated. And as you grow and you have more investors, I think the best way is just have a public pricing of everything. So there's no arguments on what's the price of what. And also you allow exit, which, you know, I've been talking to Lynn, and that's one of the biggest reasons why there's not a lot of funding for Mexican startups, because the exits are very hard. So in here, we want to give people an exit and being able to either cash out or use their shares as collateral, because you can do the same with shares, by the way, not only with Bitcoin. I mean, that's my idea, came from that, you know, dealing with banks and shares, they offer the same, you know, collateral loans. So that's why we decided to go that approach. And it also gave us the size for the Afores, which, you know, they won't get into a deal if you're too small. So it's just kind of like, you know, when you put things on the balance, yes, it's going to be a lot more compliance. Yes, it's going to be a lot more work. But we think it's worth it to really get to the Afores, which is our main objective, you know, being able to really help millions of people, give them exposure to Bitcoin and help them fight inflation.
And I just want to step back and clarify that Afores in Mexico are the pension funds. And so that might be a term that our audience is a little bit more familiar with. And I think I've heard you mention the figure $350 billion that right now is in Mexican pension funds that has very limited investment parameters that they can invest in. And so one of the objectives that you might have is to open up the ability for these pension funds to invest in a Bitcoin-based asset and therefore help the millions of people that you just mentioned. And maybe you can just talk about two things. One, just to give a perspective of, because I think this makes, you know, this is like, why would you do this for, you know, the Mexican stock exchange is not as liquid. It doesn't have the number of investors as the U.S. stock exchange or European, but it does have the ability for the pension funds to invest in certain instruments. And then also, if you can talk a little bit about how you view that market as potential buyers of Arcadia financial instruments. And then the second is the tax investment, the tax benefits of stock versus buying Bitcoin. And I think those are two unique aspects to what you're doing that I think make what Arcadia is doing a super attractive investment.
Yeah. So here in Mexico, for example, if you buy Bitcoin, spot Bitcoin, you need to pay, depending on your bracket, but you can pay up to 35% on whatever profit you made. If you buy a share of a company, you only pay 10%. There's no bracket. Everyone pays a flat 10%. So that's huge. Not to mention the new approach Saylor has been talking to, which is genius, you know, where you're returning the capital first. So there's a lot of things you can work around, but definitely in Mexico, that's one big thing. And then the Afores or the pension funds, I mean, like you said, their buckets are very restricted. And in Mexico, the majority of the market is fixed income. That's like where the big volume and everything's happening. I mean, even the carry trade moved from Japan to Mexico, some of it, because the government's paying very high fees, very high interest rates. I think Mexico is paying right now close to 8%, I think, 7 point something. So, I mean, it's almost twice what the US dollar is paying. So it's a very interesting market. It's big. Like the fixed income in Mexico is really big. you know, not so much. I think that can change. And the reason why we started doing it in Mexico and not going to, like, you know, doing dual listing or going to list outside of Mexico and then coming here is because, you know, we know the Mexican culture, the Mexican politics, and what we're doing is very new. And we know it's not going to be easy. It's going to be, you know, a lot of work, a lot of talking to people, teaching people what we're really doing. And, you know, it's, and I think doing as a native Mexican company with native founders that know the culture, know the people is going to be key. Because if you're just like a multi-billion company that just comes from outside and you're trying to dump your instruments here with this new thing, I mean, regulators, I think it's going to be really hard to do that. So our approach is like, let's orange peel the government. I mean, we can do it. They know we've been here for a while and we're trying to do those connections. And with all the investment bankers we've talked, that is our main hurdle. It's like talking to regulators and really explaining them with apples what we're doing. And, you know, like they say, if you cannot explain it to a five-year-old, you really don't know what you're doing. So we're confident we can do that. And, you know, it's not rocket science. It's very simple. And I think they're going to like it because in Mexico, you know, there's been more delistings than listings on the stock exchange in the last 10 years. So, you know, regulators are kind of like, okay, there's something we can improve. So we think it's the right timing, the right everything. You know, the U.S. is moving very fast on that front of regulation. So, you know, we just trust on the timing of God. And we think everything will just come together because definitely that's the biggest challenge in Mexico. And, you know, listing the stock, anyone can do that. But like I told you, the big part is peso denominated instruments, right? Like you need to have kind of like fixed income denominated instruments in pesos. That's kind of like where the big pools of capital are, and that's the ones we're going after.
And what's the timeline you're looking at, Jose, from Certificado Bursátil to IPO? I mean, what are we looking at as far as when the stock might actually be listed?
Yeah, I mean, like you know, we cannot give specific dates because we really don't know. I mean, but like on the work that we need to do, what's our responsibility? So we're probably going to be issuing the first instrument late Q1, early Q2 next year. And then the next instrument probably going to be Q3. And from that point on, we're basically fully listed. We can issue a lot of stuff. The IPO, 18 months from now, maybe 2 years tops. That's kind of like our expectations, but you never know. You know, it's not granted, it's not a given, anything can happen. We cannot, like, for certain tell people that we're going to be able to do this, but we're very confident that we will, because we've seen the demand is there, and the more instruments you issue, I mean, and like I told you before, like, a new listing is a rare thing in Mexico, so if we do things properly, and, you know, once they see our audit, because right now we're being audited by Baker Tilly. So once we publish that and we show the government how we're doing everything by the book, I think we'll be listed in 2 years or so.
I'd love to dive a little bit deeper into the regulatory opportunities, challenges. I mean, several years ago, Mexico published a fintech law that everybody was championing as kind of a model. And then it ended up not really being helpful for digital assets and even for fintech. So I think we've had waves as presidents have changed and policies have changed, much like we see in the U.S. It's like you have an administration that's very friendly to innovation or to new models, and then you have another administration that's less friendly. How do you view it from the long-term perspective that you have of what you can do or what the government really should be doing in order to advance this economy? And I guess the second part of that question would be, how much of a role model do you feel El Salvador is or could be in terms of what they've been able to accomplish as a small nation, but in the region that has faced some of the similar problems that other nations and the other countries in the region have faced? I mean, do you feel that they're viewed as an example at all?
Yes, I think it's in the back of everyone, you know, and you can, like, people cannot lie about the results. I mean, they're there. Anyone can go and see them from themselves. You know, I invite anyone to go to El Salvador and walk at night. You know, before that was unthinkable. So the results are there. And I think it's definitely on the minds of every citizen and probably a lot of politicians as well. So here in Mexico, you know, we've always kind of followed the U.S. You know, the U.S. is a big daddy. So whatever is happening there, whatever regulation is there, we'll follow. I think, you know, the current Mexican government, one of the benefits is like they control, they have a lot of control in the country right now. So if they want to change, they can change things very fast. And I think they will, because once they understand Bitcoin and they see the U.S. is moving that direction, and like you mentioned, okay, what happened in El Salvador, and you see all this movement, I think they're going to like it because, you know, they're more on the left side, so they're not very friendly with the U.S. And, you know, Bitcoin is a way of being more independent. If they really understand that in a big macro way, I mean, I think we'll be able to convince them that it's not helpful only for Mexicans, but also for the Mexican government to start, you know, accumulating some Bitcoin and gaining some independence from central banking infrastructure. So, I mean, yeah, I think I'm very positive, really. I'm very positive because I think inflation is going to run hot everywhere in the world, not just in Mexico. And desperate times call for desperate measures.
Just listening to what you were mentioning, Jose, it reminded me of when I was first studying Bitcoin, and I was precisely trying to think through these scenarios, right? Of, well, how are governments going to react? And, you know, how does this play out? And when you get into that game theory aspect, and of course, you have to really study, you know, the incentive structure behind Bitcoin and understand it as a network and its, you know, decentralization and all of that. But I remember for me when I realized, like, holy crap, no matter who you are, you know, an individual, a business or a government, you really are better off by plugging into this network than you are trying to fight it. And, you know, to your point, I think regardless of political inclination, many countries will start to just see the economic societal benefits and just the sovereignty aspect of not depending on your adversaries. You know, it will be fascinating to see how this all develops. And we are starting to see some movements in Latin America. Orange in Brazil recently became the first publicly listed company. You're, of course, you know, paving the way in Mexico. So, I mean, I'm very excited to see this, you know, evolve and mature. And I wanted to ask you, Jose, because I do agree with something you mentioned earlier that you would rather start maybe thoughtfully and slowly, not get ahead of yourself and, you know, maybe raise money and deploy money too fast and do it in a prudent manner, let's say. So that being said, I mean, 2025 has been a pretty interesting year. I think we may be approaching close to 200 or so publicly listed Bitcoin treasury companies globally at this stage. But of course, not all of them will succeed.
Even selling Bitcoin. Some of them have been selling Bitcoin.
Yeah, I saw a word early November, and I saw news this morning precisely on one of these treasury companies basically being forced sellers, right, of the Bitcoin, which you supposedly acquire to not sell. So what, you know, what I want to ask you is, what are some of the lessons, you know, is it maybe on debt levels or just general strategy? How are you thinking through this? And what are some of the lessons that you're taking away from, you know, strategy and all the others that have followed?
So I think it's like, you need to do a lot of lobbying with investors. Because if you go after the cheap money, I mean, you give them shares, like if they give you the money fast, that means it's good for them, not for the company. So you want to do something that's good for the company and also good for them, or good for both, it takes a lot more convincing to do. Right. So we are a low time preference. We see this playing out over the next 10 years. We're not thinking, you know, 1 year or 2 years. So it's a long game. And whoever has the patience and the time is going to win, because, you know, nobody can buy time. And if you have the patience and the time and just, even if you don't stack as much Bitcoin, but then we're not forced to sell, or whatever, you know, we could end up with more Bitcoin. So we're not competing against anyone. Some people are, you know, seeing these metrics. Oh, this company has this much Bitcoin. I need to, you know, what is my ranking? And it's like, each country has their own needs, their own market. For us, it's more as a long-term play, orange pilling Mexico. Basically, that's our whole, you know, our goal is not stacking as much Bitcoin as possible. Our goal is to orange pill Mexico. So on that front, you know, we're not in a rush. We'll take things slow. And definitely the biggest part for me is just getting the right kind of investors that think the same way as we do, that they're not looking for an exit in 1 year. Like, it's IPO, let's dump the shares. Like, I have an exit. We want people that, you know, they're going to hold the shares and they really believe this in the long term. If you don't, that's fine. We'll give you preferred shares. But if you want to get into the cap table, you need to be aligned with the same vision that we have, you know. And because, you know, we could very easily right now raise money and dilute ourselves and put people on the cap table. But we won't do it. It's like, we'll rather grow slow and don't dilute ourselves and lose control of the company and bring people who are just playing fiat games, right?
I love this perspective. And I want to extend the thought process on this to just to something that we were involved in a workshop during Mexico Tech Week. Jose, you and I and several other speakers just presenting the whole concept of Bitcoin treasuries for any kind of tech startup or any kind of company and overall. And you mentioned the independence level that El Salvador had by adopting Bitcoin. You talked about your own company's ability to, during different market cycles, to extend your runway because you had Bitcoin on your treasury. So what would you say to other companies about the importance of thinking about a Bitcoin treasury strategy, no matter what business they're in? And how have you seen that affect your journey as a founder?
I mean, it just, for me, Bitcoin is just a beauty. Yeah, and it's really its incentives. People, it's not like I was, you know, illuminated. It's just incentives. Really puts those incentives in front of you and people just move that way because it's more convenient and it's better for you. So I think every single company, every single startup should start putting some Bitcoin on the balance sheet, but not just that, like really understanding Bitcoin. And that changes, number one, your time preference. For me, that's everything. So you start eating better, you start taking care of yourself, valuing other things, not just money and work, like family, relationships, being a more balanced person. And that's going to help your business at the end of the day. You know, it's like they say, work smart, not hard. So Bitcoin really changes you, your psyche as a person. Is it lowers your time preference, so you start thinking in decades, not you know, months or year. And Bitcoin helps you think on decades because you have that cushion that can help you if there's a drought or there's like hard times. You have that cushion that can help you, you know, go through bad timings and not bring people that you are not aligned with your vision. So, and the other thing is just, it also at the same time, you become very efficient at spending because you know the opportunity cost in the future of those Bitcoins. So it's just like, yeah, I have more cushion, but at the same time, like I'm very, very, very jealous on how to use that cushion. Like you will not do it. You won't waste money. For me, that's the end of the day, is you don't waste money. Because imagine a VC, you know, let's put the other situation in my case. If I, instead of being my money and having Bitcoin, someone just give me $10 million. They just gave it to me out of the blue. My story will be completely different. Like I would have wasted all that money, throw it in marketing and hiring people and just going over it really fast. And probably will be broke if I didn't raise another round and probably out of business. The other way around is like, okay, we have Bitcoin there, but we were so jealous at spending the money. And not just that, like it also made us better person, take care of our health. And the whole culture in the company is like that. It's not like, we don't want workaholics here. We want people that value their time, their family life. You know, you need to be a balanced person to be productive, to be creative, to be, you know, at your best. And I think Bitcoin really gave us that. And it's just understanding Bitcoin and the incentives that gives you that. It's not that we are a better person than others. It's just that we learned Bitcoin. And I think anyone that learns Bitcoin are going to become this way.
You hit on some very important points there, Jose, and very well said, because yeah, it's true. I mean, it gives you back time. It allows you to plan for the future. I think I've heard you before call it monetary defense. And yeah, you're right. I mean, when you're thinking in a currency, pick whatever government currency that is, you know, pesos, dollars, whatever it is. I mean, we all actually just subconsciously already understand that it's something that loses value. That's why people for decades, you know, even pre-Bitcoin, have looked for ways to just park their purchasing power somewhere. You know, maybe that was during some decades the stock market, during some decades real estate, or, you know, a combination of these more traditional assets. But now, of course, Bitcoin gives you many, many benefits. And I truly encourage anyone listening, as you were mentioning, Jose, to look into this. I mean, just study the basic incentive structures and realize that it can benefit no matter who you are, right? I mean, a very traditional business, just from a fundamental and starting point, it's going to protect your purchasing power. And then there's this whole other, you know, technological side of it that's, you know, gets a little more, you know, more technical. But the network itself also provides, which of course Lynn and I cover quite a bit, a lot of different ways to plug into this, you know, essentially new internet for value transfer. And the opportunities, I mean, and the doors that are opening up are just countless. I mean, it really is at times even like too much to grasp. Off the back of that, Jose, what's exciting you the most for the coming few years?
I mean, really is it not knowing. That's what really excites me the most, in the sense that I think we are in the phase, like, imagine when the internet came about. We are in the phase where the internet was like, you need to just hang up your phone so you will get a connection, and everything was really slow. And you had like this, okay, you had web, but it was like, it started like loading, like, you know, very little by little. We're at that stage in Bitcoin right now where it's not user friendly. It's very cyberpunk, people using it and doing some crazy stuff. And we've had our dot-com bubbles as well. And I think there's going to be crashes, but the ones that survived are going to be the next Googles, the next Facebooks, the next Nvidias. Like, I really think that Bitcoin is going to change the world in ways that we don't understand yet. Kind of like the internet, like, people that really understood the internet in the 1990s, yeah, I mean, they kind of like thought what was going to happen, but they never understood we're going to have Uber and we're going to have Google Maps and we're going to like all this stuff. It's hard to predict. And that's what excites me the most, is like, what's next for Bitcoin? And I think there's a lot of next things we have no idea they're coming, and they're going to be game changers, and they're just going to, you know, blow the adoption around the world. So yeah, that's what really excites me. Like, what's going to be the new iteration? It's not iteration because the same layer, underlying layer, but it's like, what's going to be the new thing that's going to really take adoption on a massive scale? And I think it's not just going to be one thing, you know, it's going to be several different things. Like the internet, you needed internet, then you needed wireless, then you needed smartphones. So there were like different technologies coming together. And I think Bitcoin is kind of going to be something like that, where you have hardware wallets and then a layer two and then something else. And that's going to like really take Bitcoin on a exponential growth. We're already there, but I think just a little bit user-friendly stuff is going to, like, for example, inherent in Bitcoin. Like, what happens if I die? Like, all those needed tricky parts, they're just getting easier and easier and easier with time. So I think eventually there's going to be like this aha moment where it's going to be very easy for anyone to use custody Bitcoin and move it around the world without having to think, oh, is layer one, is layer two, is Lightning. It's like, no, it's just put it on your phone and click it. Email was like that also. So yeah, that's what really excites me the most, is just what we don't really know or can't predict that's going to happen, which is going to change everything.
Which is really why financial services firms like yours built on Bitcoin just have such a green field ahead of them. And, you know, in terms of what you're able to offer, how to make it easier for people to start owning Bitcoin and then also using it. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity out there. And just want to, you know, as we start to wind it down, Jose, just throw it back to you just to talk about your vision for Arcadia over, you know, what do you see the offerings being, or how can people start following you? I'm happy that you're now more visible, you know, in conferences and talking more. And I think part of that has to do with your two new executive team members, Boyd Cohen and Ed Julien, that are assisting you on this whole strategy of being a more visible treasury company. So what's the best way to keep up with everything that you're doing and that Arcadia is doing?
Yeah, you can follow us on our social media. We have X, Instagram, or YouTube, ArcadiaB, ArcadiaB.com as well. You'll find all the information you need there. And what I'm looking forward to the future is just, you know, more synergies with the government, better regulation, and make really a safe, you know, regulated space so people can, you know, start investing with trust and have like very clear regulation on where to go and how to do it properly. I think that's huge. The US is going in that direction. And I think that like incentives will make it that so that everyone else will follow. And I think that's the last hurdle for Bitcoin to really go mainstream. It's like governments accepting it, putting very clear regulation on it, and everyone gets on the game, even themselves. So that's what I see happening before the next halving. And we're very excited because we're going to be there to be able to capitalize on this and execute our strategy and make sure people have the instruments, you know, be ready and make sure people can access Bitcoin when the time is right. So for me, this is huge because I really do believe that a lot of people are going to start this way and then translate into spot Bitcoin on the hardware wallet. You know, it's like a Trojan horse kind of approach. So pretty excited for the future.
Well, I think that's a great place to leave the conversation, Jose. And we'll, of course, leave the links and social media handles that you mentioned in the show notes. And we definitely look forward to seeing Arcadia B's evolution in the coming months. Thanks for joining us today and hope to have a conversation with you again in the near future.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Jose.